Next week, he's on from 4 o'clock all the way till 6 o'clock. Not just 5 to 6. He'll be here from 4 to 6. I'm not here. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. And that means you and you and you. And have an amazing Christmas. I'll see you in a couple weeks. This is Vin Magazzini signing off. This is WMFO Medford. Have a great and meaningful Christmas. And I'll see you soon. This is WMFO Medford.
I caught you cheating and running round, and now I'm gonna put you in.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Touch Free Farm Radio. Before anything else, we're going to start the show in a matter of moments, but today is no ordinary show. We have 2019 Boston Sports Year in Review program coming up shortly. I'll be joined with special guest writer for the Boston Herald, Tom Keegan, joining momentarily. So stay tuned. We're going to leave the show not with our usual theme song, but this song is specifically, it is specifically perfect for this occasion. You're going to like it. I can't wait. Let's get the show rolling, shall we? Let's go.
To Boston and Dr. Murphy, because this whole show is going to be all about Boston and Boston sports in 2019, because let's face it, it's been one tremendous year, and we're going to spend the next hour talking about the best of Boston sports. And I'm very happy to let you know that I'm joined today in the studio with Tom Keegan, writer for the Boston Herald. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me, Shukri. It's great to be back on a college campus after all these years.
I know. Doesn't it bring back a lot of memories?
It does. I haven't been on college radio, and I'm not even going to say how many years.
let's not do that for the sake of, just keeping it vague for the second. But let's face it, today is a special day because not only that I have you in studio, but I'm going to be joined in by two other guests today. Michael Hurley, he'll be joining in. He's from CBS Boston. He'll be joining in 10 minutes, actually, calling into the show live and joining us for 30 minutes. He'll be with us until 5:45. And as well as Celtics writer Jose Pavon, he'll be joining us at 5:30. He's a writer for WEEI and also does work for CLNS Media, covering the Celtics as well. So I can't wait. But
when I was working in New York and I come here with the Yankees to cover those great games, Michael Holley was writing for the Globe. He was an outstanding columnist.
Wow. You want to talk about, like, memories and so forth.
You know, one thing I will say is this. In 2019, we saw arguably one of the most unprecedented years in terms of professional sports success of any city in America. Because when we started this year, this calendar year in January, you had the Red Sox, who just won the World Series. You had the Patriots, who were beginning their run to Super Bowl title number 6. And then the Celtics, well, on paper, they had the talent to go ahead and win the whole thing. But obviously, we know how that ended. And then the Bruins, which we'll get to. They had their run to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. So I gotta ask you, as a writer for the Herald, what has 2019 meant to you professionally in terms of being able to cover all four of these teams as they had championship aspirations from the start of the season?
Well, that's one of the main things that drew me here, is I knew that these were four relevant teams, all contenders, all exciting, all urgency from the fans and from management in each organization. And, you know, the best thing in the world is to cover a team that's really, really good, championship caliber. And then the next best thing, if you can't have that, the next best thing is to have organizations that are a mess, that are really, really bad, because then you have to figure out how to straighten things out. And eventually Boston will get there, because everything goes in cycles, but it's not going to be anytime soon, I assure you that. And I think the urgency from the fans, it starts with the fans and extends through the media, who are the representatives of the fans. They put that pressure on these teams. It's not easy town to be in, so those teams vet their leadership and they hold them to a high standard, and that's why you see the Red Sox firing general managers who win World Series. And then, you know, what have you done for me lately?
Exactly. And you know what's interesting? I got to ask, when was the last time that you saw a professional sports team 1 year after winning a championship fire the general manager? What other city does that happen in?
Yeah, I don't think it happens. It just doesn't happen.
No.
And, you know, he did make had a horrible run of decisions and burned through a lot of money, and hey, what have you done for me lately? And they canned them, and you know, you can understand why. And now they're gonna kind of on a bridge to nowhere, trying to cut payroll, because if you don't, you really, really get hammered if you hit the luxury tax 3 years in a row. So they're trying to get down to 208, and as long as they can do it without getting rid of Mookie Betts, I'm fine with that. But I hate this idea of getting rid of Mookie Betts.
You know, that's been a topic of discussion throughout this entire offseason so far. What are they going to do to get under the luxury tax on threshold? Because we heard it from ownership this past September, before they went out and made the decision to hire Chaim Bloom. They're going to try to get under the luxury on tax threshold, and it's not easy, especially if you're talking about remaining competitive. And there's only been one team in this decade that's been able to do that successfully. Although they have no World Series to show for it, but that's their arch rival, the New York Yankees. Because even the years that they didn't make the playoffs, they were still competitive late into the season. although they were still, quote-unquote, under rebuild, especially when you look between the years of 2013 and 15, when they were drafting, you know, developing the young guys, like especially Judge, who was drafted in 2013, but, you know, obviously ended up becoming a superstar, as well as, you know, Gary Sanchez, you know, the Severinos, who made his debut in 2015. Judge and Sanchez made their debuts in 2016 and so forth. So it goes to show you that it's not impossible to get under the luxury tax threshold and still be competitive, but it's not easy.
No, it's an incredibly hard juggling act,
yeah.
And that's why this search that started with the owners saying they need to get someone who has an experience as someone who has run the baseball operation.
Absolutely.
That's how it started, and it ended with getting a guy who basically was number three with the Devil Rays.
Yeah.
So they, you know, the guys with experience took a look at it, said, I'm not leaving my good situation and going there.
Exactly.
When they fire a guy who just won the World Series,
mm-hmm.
they want to cut payroll and be competitive. It's tough. It's a tough juggling act. And as far as how to get under that luxury tax, you know, David Price is one way, but teams will try to fleece him by, you know, there was even one report that, well, if you give us Mookie Betts, too, we're fine with that, and then we'll give you a bag of baseballs in return, and you've
exactly.
got one of your goals is all taken care of. Well, that's well and good, but I don't know how you're competitive if you give up both of those guys.
I think you'll compete level, especially in the division, goes down considerably. Consider this. Let's say, for example, they trade away Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez, because remember, J.D. Martinez opted in to next season.
And he wouldn't have done that if he thought he could get more money elsewhere. So I don't see how they think they can trade him. I mean, if someone wanted him, the word would have gotten to his agent and he would have gone there and the team wouldn't have to give anything up. So I don't think that's a real realistic thing.
Even if it wasn't realistic from the onset, playing devil's advocate for a moment in terms of, let's say, if they wanted to, you know, move some of these big contracts and so forth. And you look at the guys who are making the most money in the roster. You know, David Price, as you mentioned, Mookie Betts, who is, correct me if I'm wrong, he's going to be arbitration eligible again soon. If not coming up already.
Probably 30 million,
yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, the question is, are the Red Sox going to be willing to pay him that amount of money that he's seeking? Now,
once it gets to arbitration, it's out of their hands. You know,
yeah.
you give your figure, and the agent gives their figure, and then the arbitrator picks A or B. So, and J.D. Martinez, you know, if they take some of the money and trade him, I'm sure they could do that. But I don't know. I don't know that. Chris Sale is the one. If I were the Red Sox owners, and and Dombrowski went ahead and signed Chris Sale instead of letting him go to the free agency.
Yeah.
Go to free agency, give him all that money with his arm history. I would have fired Dombrowski based on that alone.
I was shocked, and we're going to start talking about the Red Sox in terms of the 2019 year in review in Boston sports because of that very topic. Now, back in March, at that time I was a writer for the Yawkway Report. In which that they broke the story that they were going to give him that amount of money, and I said it was a terrible decision at the time. And
well, you were right.
And the Red Sox fans were getting on me, were saying like, "What are you talking
of
about?"
Course.
Like, but I'm like, but here's the thing: a lot of people were not thinking in hindsight. Like, number one, he has yet to show you that he can pitch 30 starts in a season.
Right.
And then on top of that, the history that he's had with arm injuries, especially with the injury that ended his season back in August, which was
his shoulder, and now he's dealing with an elbow.
With an elbow, so...
Hey, when he's healthy, he's great, obviously.
Absolutely.
But there was no urgency there. If you get to the end of the season, let's say he's healthy all year, then he gets to the end of the season, yeah, you're going to have to pay a little more than you did.
Absolutely.
But you'd feel better about paying it than having your fingers crossed all season and then seeing his arm give out. It's that was a tough one. That was a tough one. And you don't even if you had been for it, let's say you had written you were for it, it doesn't matter. You're judged on the results, not how something looks at the time.
Exactly.
Which is why Kyrie Irving ended up being a terrible move.
Yeah, because
it doesn't matter. It was a no-brainer at the time. Well, you got to be smarter than someone who can make a no-brainer decision. And Danny Ainge wasn't. He made a bad decision, and now he's put together a terrific roster. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Absolutely. And you know, one thing that's interesting. Before Michael Herter calls in about in a matter of seconds, is there's an interesting parallel that you grew up, and I don't know if you caught on to it, in terms of Dave Dombrowski and Danny Ainge. Both are responsible for making arguably two of the most important decisions in terms of trades slash signings for their respective clubs, yet one resulted in a championship, the other one resulted in a toxic mess that was last season and was just part of the big story for the 2019 Red Sox. So one question I want to pose to you is this, because it's easy to look at things from hindsight. If you go back, let's say, if you're Dave Dombrowski, 2017, offseason 2017, you go out, you make the trade, and you decide you're going to go out and as well as not only trade your best prospect and Yoan Moncada in that deal, but also you know that he has arm trouble. He has yet to pitch 200 innings when healthy. Do you still make that deal, knowing that you're going to win the World Series in 2018?
Yes, I think you do. You won the World Series, so I'm going to say yes on that one.
Hey, Mike, how's it going? Good, good. Give me one second. I'm going to put you on the air just momentarily, okay? Continue. That was Michael Hurley that just called in. He's going to join us live on the show now on the Sugar Right Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford.
Michael, thank you for joining in. We're just getting started and getting warmed up. And I want to ask you the same thing I just asked Tom Keegan, who's here in studio with us from the Boston Herald. If you are Dave Dombrowski, who just got fired this past September, you go out and you trade for Chris Sale, who we know who's had issues with his arm, shoulder, and now his elbow, knowing that he's yet to pitch 200 innings in a healthy season, do you still go out and make that move, knowing the risk of signing him to a long-term deal while at the same time having an idea, knowing that he can potentially lead this ball club to a World Series title?
So is that if Dave Dombrowski's with another team?
That's if he was here. But if you were Dave Dombrowski back in 2017, would you have made this move?
Oh, see, now that was a deal. I mean, we all from the outside could see, you know, the second half breakdowns, the August and September numbers, the physical frame, all these signs that pointed to that being a bad idea. But when they signed him, I kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt that, well, they must know more than I do about this guy's medicals. They must know he's healthy. And then, sure enough, he makes it about 3 months into the season and shuts it down pretty much. So it seemed like a risky deal when they did it. The only reason that I didn't, you know, sort of, you know, light my hair on fire about it was because I figured they knew. And
plus, you don't have any hair anymore, Michael.
This goes away, but I figured, you know, that's they must know, but they didn't, and now that deal, if he's healthy, it's a great deal, but that's a massive if that I don't think even they know the answer to.
No, yeah, it was crazy. I mean, what's the downside of waiting till the end of the year? It's a good trade to get him. Ideal. He wins you a World Series, or he helps your team get there, and then he gets hurt late in that year, but I mean, what's the downside of waiting? Maybe they pay $2, $3, $4, maybe even $5 million more a year if he makes it through a healthy season and they decide they want to keep him. Crazy move.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you end up negotiating against yourself. And for the fact that they did that and now they're in a position with Heim Bloom sort of pretty much outright saying that they're, you know, in budget mode, it doesn't help when all of these sort of, you know, financial wounds are self-inflicted, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a bit, and now they're on the bridge to nowhere. Because
exactly.
They don't want to, you know, trigger that third year in a row of busting the luxury tax. Why would you want to do that? But bridge to nowhere, man. No wonder nobody wanted that job.
And you know, like just real quickly for those who are just tuning live, you're listening to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tusk Free Farm Radio. special edition 2019 Boston Sports Year in Review. Joining studio with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, and joining us live on the line right now is Michael Hurley of WBZ-CBS Boston.
Formerly a great columnist at the Globe.
Wow, as well as formerly a great columnist at the Globe.
That would be Michael Hawley. He's a little bit more accomplished than I am. I actually once got an interview with someone, and mid-interview he said, "Wait, who am I talking to?" I said, "Michael Hurley."
Yeah, I thought it was Michael Hawley. Yeah, I did the same thing.
Wow.
Michael Hawley. I was like, no, but I'm going to ask a question before you hang up, because I got a few more questions I got to ask. So
this has happened to you twice now.
Wow.
Yeah. We do Boston Sports Tonight together sometimes, so that people can differentiate us. We are a little bit different.
That would be something. Trust me, and I wouldn't pass on the opportunity, considering all things. Now, the next thing I want to discuss, and this topic I'm going to have the most fun with, and throughout the duration of this entire show, it's going to be a lot of fun. But the Patriots. Before we went on the air, Tom, like we were talking in the back room about what a crazy week it's been. And in talking about the timing of it, obviously, we can't talk about 2019 without talking about the run that the Patriots went on this past January leading into February to win their sixth Super Bowl title, while at the same time, we're now experiencing Spygate 2.0. So I want to ask both of you your thoughts. Number one, if you're the Patriots, how do you deal with this fiasco now as compared to the first time Spygate took place? And secondly, considering all the issues that they've had this season, what do you do to try to defend your legacy? Because in the view of the national media, it's forever tarnished.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things, and I think the biggest screw up the league made back in 2007 was destroying the tapes, because I feel like if people were to actually watch those tapes, they'd have a much better understanding, because as it was, it basically allowed the entire country to create in their minds whatever was on those tapes, you know, as if those tapes had like a magical, you know, like fairy book sort of enchantment spell that allowed the Patriots to win so much. And now you have it again where it's, you know, obviously some, you know, hired guy, he shouldn't have been doing it, obviously the producer there certainly should have known that was not a very smart thing to do. But I would like this tape to get out, because that way people can see, it's like, oh, everyone in the stadium can see it. It's really nothing secretive. It's against the rules, obviously, but it's not as if this is why they've been good for 20 years. I think that would be better, but at the same time, realistically, they're hated for a reason. You know, they are the Patriots. They are the Yankees of the 90s.
Absolutely.
People are sick of them. People want them to go down. So any little, you know, nibble you give them, they're going to devour and just go crazy. But so it really doesn't even matter whether or not it gets out, because people sort of are pretty well entrenched in their stances toward the Patriots at this point.
Oh, yeah. They've got their minds made up that they're cheaters, and this is another instance of it. Never mind that if you were going to be that devious and have your own TV show go to tape this, you know, the one week you pick for your advanced scout feature is the week that you're playing the 1-12 Bengals. I think you'd save that for the Chiefs if you were in on that. There is no way Bill Belichick had anything to do with this, and it, you know, but they still got to get their wrists slapped. Otherwise, it's free marketing for a show that nobody ever heard of, and now everybody's heard of it and everyone will watch it. Why should they get a free ratings boost based on their own sloppiness and neglect? This is a case of neglect, and the NFL will slap their wrists, even though I'm sure they'll be convinced that the football operation had nothing to do with this.
And you know, I want to also add another thing to this as well. Of all the teams, and I kept asking this whole week, and I'm going to ask now to the both of you, why on earth the Bengals of all teams? Why? Because to me, this whole thing reeks of just low sportsmanship, if in fact the allegations are true. And to me, and as you mentioned, if you were going to do that, the Chiefs, okay, well, fine, whatever. I'm just saying hypothetically.
But the first angle that came to me was like, the Bengals are the worst team in the NFL this season. What type of advantage do you think you need to get on a team that has struggled this entire season so far?
Well, it's one of many reasons it makes no sense.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen.
Right, and that's why I think the league, too, probably put some feelers out. Like, hey, has this ever happened in your press box? You know, Kansas City Chiefs or Chicago Bears or New York Giants? Like, has this? And my guess is the answer is no. And my guess is this was a one-time screw-up because, again, not only does it not make sense for this to be some elaborate plot involving the Bengals, but to do it in the front row of the press box, monitor facing all of the Bengals employees. If this were to be your secret plan, I'm not sure that is the message. When they had been in the third row of the press box, where you could have actually done it secretly and had to move into the front and just let the world know, I think as much as the league doesn't want to, they're going to end up buying the story.
And in all of this, let's face it. The 2019 Patriots have had a season full of drama, scandal, and who knows what's to make of it. Because let's face it, they have three more games, including tomorrow's game against Cincinnati at 1 o'clock. They have the Bills, which is the big one next Saturday night in Foxborough. That game was flexed to a Saturday game, in case you may have missed it. And as well as the Week 17 game against the Dolphins. Now, I think this is befitting to ask both of you. If you are an outsider looking in at this 2019 Patriots, considering everything that's going on, which includes what I'm about to put on the table, Tom Brady, is he really in decline, or is it a product of just bad talent that's been put around him by Belichick due to poor drafting? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think at this point, at the age of 42, he's probably in a little bit of decline every year.
Yeah,
you know, you reach a point. And then when your elbow is sore, that's an age-related thing. Yeah. I mean, as you age, you get more aches and pains. But obviously, the offensive line is not anywhere near Patriots standards.
And David Andrews, the loss of David Andrews is a massive one. We didn't think of it at the time back in September.
I think you thought of it at the time. He's just a really well thought of center. Yeah. I mean, I don't watch a game and really watch the center, but I know that he's very highly regarded.
Absolutely.
And super smart guy and everything else. So the line is not good at all, and usually it's great. Gronkowski, also excellent blocker. So and obviously a great target too. But so the running game is shot for those two reasons, the line and Gronkowski. And then his weapons, no more Gronk. And you know, the Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown things didn't work out.
Michael, your thoughts?
What I'm coming around on, because I kind of kept seeing it, especially against Houston, who has a terrible defense, and especially against Kansas City, who has a very bad defense at home, I kind of figured, all right, this is when it starts to click, and it didn't. They just kept getting worse, and you kind of look at it, and the offensive line is obviously a problem, and for the first time I can remember, it's easy to scheme up a defense against the Patriots. You put a man-to-man on everyone, and you double Julian Edelman.
Absolutely.
Like, maybe Mohamed Sanu would have been if he didn't hurt his ankle on that punt return in Philly, because it's that easy. You look back at some of their big wins, when they use James White, it's because they haven't matched up against a linebacker, because everyone else is sort of accounted for. Every defensive back is on a receiver that warrants that attention. And now you give all your attention to Edelman and then White, and then it's just you could put any NFL corner is going to cover Jacoby Myers because he's not getting open. And Mohamed Sanu with a bum ankle is not beating anyone in man coverage. So you take out the tight end. For as much as Gronkowski didn't have a spectacular statistical year last year, there was no defense that just left him alone and just said, whatever, he stinks now. They still put the normal Gronk defense on him, which opened things up elsewhere. So it's really just a combination of all of them. I look at Brady, he misses 3, 4, 5 throws a game, but I don't think that's much different than most of his career. I think physically he still got it. It's tough. It's a grind to just watch that offense, let alone
You're right.
It really is.
And good point on James White. It's got cornerbacks covering him now. He's gone from the fourth or fifth guy to worry about to the second or third now.
Yeah, especially when he's the second or third best option. And now here's the big question that I have the first opportunity to ask both of you, and that is,
Do you honestly think, right here, right now, tell me, do you honestly think that Brady returns in 2020?
I don't know if Brady even knows the answer, but my gut reaction would be yes, because if you look at what would be best for the Patriots and what would be best for Brady, and you look at every other team in the league, I think what's best for Brady is to return to the Patriots, and he and Belichick can sit down in a dark room and watch a bunch of film of every available free agent or a college guy who's a tight end and a receiver. Belichick can convince them all the draft picks are going to the offense. We're going to fortify the line, and David Andrews will be back,
absolutely,
hopefully. And then what's best for Brady? Well, I have yet to hear the team. You hear a lot of talk about the Dolphins, and they've got cap room. Well, mm-hmm. How often in football do you see a really horrible team just because they have cap room get really good? I don't know.
It rarely ever happens, unless if you're talking about the 2012 Denver Broncos when they went out and signed Peyton Manning after he sat out all of the 2011 season, then that's a rare exception, but those instances are very far and in between. They don't happen very often.
And then he could retire. That's the other option.
Exactly.
I mean, if he doesn't retire, my guess is he'll be with the Patriots.
Michael, your thoughts?
I agree with that, too, because I kind of think retirement is more on the table than it's getting credit for, because he's been pretty open a million times about the family commitment and the time commitment and how he gives his life to this game and all that. And you watch him out there on Sundays, and it doesn't look like he's really enjoying it. It doesn't really seem like he's getting the return on that investment that he's hoping for. And, you know, granted, it's still December. There's still 3 weeks. Maybe things turn and things become a little bit more fun. But you see him in Houston after the second drive, when he has a miscommunication with Jacoby Myers, and he's screaming and he's pointing up the field and gesturing, and it seems like he's not out there having the most fun time, and that's probably a part of the personnel about just the way things are right now, and I don't think getting hit nonstop at age 42 is what anyone really wants. So if he is to play, I still think it's New England, because it's definitely a grass is greener situation where it's like, oh, he could go to L.A. It's like, well, is he going to play for Anthony Lynn? I don't think so. Or he could go to, I don't know, any team that needs a quarterback, Minnesota. The only one that makes sense is Chicago, and they're not going to ditch their top 10 pick at quarterback. So I lean retirement or back to the Patriots. I guess we shouldn't be surprised because it's 2019 and people do their own thing, but I'd still be surprised if he plays somewhere else.
Personally, I have a hunch feeling that he goes elsewhere, and there's two major reasons why. Of course, it's natural to see Brady get as frustrated as he's gotten, as he's been with this offense, but we've seen some uncharacteristic behavior from Brady that we have flat out, we didn't even see even last year. And even to add to it, you mean to tell me that he puts his home in Brookline or wherever else that it was before, up for sale, and relocates his family elsewhere? That, to me, when that happened over the summer, I was like, oh? So what sense does it make for any man in any profession to relocate your family and your house further away from where you work or from where you make your living? And then on top of that, I can't believe from the beginning of the season, the drop-off in talent that surrounded Brady and Belichick's refusal to make any type of adjustment.
Well, wait a minute now. He signed in Antonio Brown and gambled on Antonio Brown, and there went $10 million. So I don't think he refused.
True, but after they decided to let him go,
plus they overpaid for Mohamed Sanu. He's probably worth a third or fourth round pick, but they were desperate, so they gave up a second round pick. So I don't think he refused.
I was concerned when they got Sanu, not from a lack of talent perspective, but considering that your number one best option at that point is Edelman. You turn around and you decide that bringing in Sanu, he's a complimentary piece, but he is not your home run threat. And that's something that the Patriots, as compared to years past, have absolutely lacked. Is having that home run threat on offense, especially you have a guy that can run straight down the field. They don't have that right now. Not even Sanu can do that, and he's banged up.
Well, they probably haven't had that since Delvin Cooks, right?
Brandon Cooks.
Brandon Cooks,
yes.
Rather.
Correct.
Isn't he? Wouldn't he be the last one?
He was the last one, but he went to L.A.
Right, but I mean, yeah. It's not like they haven't survived without it before. But when you don't have Gronkowski,
it's awfully hard, especially without Gronkowski. And Michael, you could speak to it, but the loss of Gronkowski is huge, especially for this offense.
Yeah, and I think that was sort of the underrated loss of the offseason. Gronkowski obviously is an immense, you know, sort of once in a generation talent. He's obviously made the NFL top 100 team, but he and Dwayne Allen as blockers on the run game were, you couldn't get two better tight ends when it came to run blocking. So not only did you lose those two, you lost Trent Brown, then you lose David Andrews, and then you lose Isaiah Wynn for half the year. It's the offense has, you know, unsurprisingly struggled to find an identity. And last year at this time, they went to the run game, and that became their identity. But it's still, we overstate that because of how the Super Bowl went.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't get there without the passing offense doing what it did in Kansas City and against the Chargers. So,
100.
They didn't have the deep threat last year, but they had a well-rounded offense. And this year, it's just not happening. I thought it would have happened against Houston and Kansas City. So now it's kind of like, I think they're going to, you know, roll over the Bengals. I think they're going to play a 7-6 game against the Bills one way or the other, and then beat the Dolphins. And we'll be going to the playoffs saying the same thing. That we're saying right now.
I hope so. Really, trust me.
7-6, huh?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
oh,
I don't know which team's going to be which, but I mean, 7-6.
That would be one way to win a game. Like, oh, the Pats beat the Bills on 7-6 or heck, 13-10. Like, oh.
Well, with some of the kicking issues the Pats have had, it might be 7-6 with a missed extra point.
Exactly.
With like three missed field goals.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, you want to talk, this is sort of getting off track, but the Buffalo Bills right now, if they had a mediocre quarterback, they would have beaten the Patriots and they would have beaten the Ravens and they'd be the one seed in the AFC right now. But instead they have Josh Allen and they have four losses and they're going to be a wild card team. So that'll teach you not to draft a Wyoming quarterback with the sixth overall pick or whatever they did.
You know, he wrote to every single Division I-A coach in the country, and the only one who wrote him back was Bull from Wyoming.
Amazing.
And you know, and now we're starting to see why. Although he did, he played well for about 4 or 5 weeks after the Patriots game. But when he plays against really good competition, he's just not there.
Yeah.
I just want to read through a PSA real quick as part of the agreement. All right, so here we go. The WMFO donations drive is still in full swing. Go to WMFO.org and click on the donate tab. Fill out the donations drive Google form and then follow the link at the bottom of the form to the TIFF's giving page to make your monetary contribution. Specific directions on how to donate to WMFO on the TIFF's giving page are included next to the link within the Google form. Help support the station and everything that we do. That's for the WMFO donations drive. And calling in now, just give me one moment. It's Jose Pavon, Celtics writer for WEEI. Just stand by. WMFO. Hey, what's going on? Hey, how do you pronounce your name? Oh, Joe Sway, what's going on, man? I'm good. Hold on, I'm going to put you on the line. I have on the other line with me Michael Hurley from WBZ CBS Boston, and in studio I have Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. Just I'm going to put you on hold and on standby one moment. No problem. Yeah, so joining us now is Celtics writer for WEEI .com and as well as WEEI Sports Radio Network, as well as he does work for CLNS Media covering the Celtics, is Josue Pavon. He is on live
with us on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Good afternoon, Josue. Thank you for joining the show alongside with Michael Hurley of CBS Boston and Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, I appreciate the invite, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great. I think now will be the most appropriate time to talk about the Celtics in 2019 as a whole. And I gotta ask all three of you this question. Kyrie Irving dominated the headlines last season for all the wrong reasons. And the one thing that I keep coming back to is his talent is undeniable, but his attitude was what ultimately became an issue, especially his relationship with his teammates. And Josue, I want to ask you,
How bad was the factor in terms of his pending free agency that was coming up, and as well as the stories that was being constantly written about team chemistry, play a factor into his decision to leave the Celtics after telling season ticket holders that he was going to stay in Boston?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the fans took that to heart. That was a big part of the whole, obviously the booing and you know the way they feel about Kyrie Irving heading into the season, which I always thought was interesting because they didn't want him to stay in Boston, right? it was almost like, okay, you know, you're going to leave us and we're going to be mad. And I don't want you to, you know, but when you do, we're going to be even more upset. That's exactly what happened.
Boston?
Right? But I just think when it boils down to it, man, I really don't put all the blame on Kyrie. I mean, of course, he gets a piece of the pie. But when you look at the rest of this team, the rest of this roster, the rest of the talent that, you know, the talent level that this team has, I just think it just wasn't a match. You know, it just didn't fit. You know, him and Jaylen Brown, you know, behind closed doors or at least between the surface. Between him and the younger guys and what happened in 2018, I just think was almost like the worst thing that could have happened for this team. When we're talking about their relationship with Kyrie Irving, I think the team was like, wait a minute, we got as far as we did without Kyrie Irving, even though obviously when you look back on it, without Kyrie Irving, you don't get home court. And without home court, something's, in my opinion, they don't even get out of the first round.
I agree.
Say that.
Yeah.
In 2018. But also, we're talking about young guys with egos, you know? If we're talking 2-3 years in the league, guys who have been successful, guys who have played on that platform, have played, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals, there's a lot of ego we're talking about, you know? And I just think when it came down to it, the way his approach of, okay, if I talk down to these guys or if I put them on blast, that's going to make them, you know, I'm going to get the best out of them. It just didn't work with them because this is a completely different group of young talent that has been as far as they've been. And you know, it was almost as if he literally ripped a page out of the LeBron James book of what he went through in Cleveland. And it's like, wait, no, you can't do that with these guys, though, because what LeBron did with the younger guys was a completely different group. Also, you couple the fact that there's a lot of older guys on that Cavaliers team that went to the finals. And, you know, the relationship in the sense of what LeBron was compared to, you know, someone like Kyrie is just completely different. So I just think his approach was terrible for that group. And it was just a ripple effect from that point forward, in my opinion.
Michael, your thoughts?
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I probably got to head out. This will be my walk-off answer. But
absolutely.
Drop the mic.
it won't be anything impactful, I promise you. But I'm still stuck, and maybe this is my baby, like his baby, but Game 7 against the Cavs, it's a trip to the finals on the line, and he's not even there. You know, maybe he can't help. Maybe he can't provide, you know, knowledge to help. But if you're part of the team, isn't that where you are in that night? You're on the bench. You're with your teammates. So to me, he always was on his own program. The Nets are kind of learning that. I mean, they're having more success without him. It's granted a tiny sample size, but when he was putting up 50 to start this year, they were, what, 4-7, 4-9?
Yeah.
They've been kind of rolling without him. So I don't know. He's obviously an amazing player. When they won the championship with Cleveland, he was awe-inspiring. I mean, you'd sit there and your jaw would drop to the floor with some of the baskets he made. And I thought that would translate here. I don't begrudge the Celtics for going for it. It was worthwhile. It was worth the 2-year investment. It just didn't work out, and I think the Celtics are better off, and we'll see if Kyrie ends up better off. But yeah, not being there for Game 7 with the trip to the finals on the line was
a bad look.
Was he really getting a nose job? Is that why he missed the game?
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
See what the next awful excuse. And I think like because of that, I should have picked up on what Kyrie was going to be in 2018, 2019. Like, I feel like that was just sort of a blatant hint that we all should have realized, okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Maybe this guy's he's more different than we thought he is, you know? And it just really made no sense. The most important game of the year, you elect to do that when you've been there the entire postseason run.
Yeah. And then really Kemba Walker, the total opposite, a real people person, impossible not to get along with, I would think. And Jaylen Brown loves him. You can tell Jaylen Brown loves him, doesn't he?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, the positivity that we heard about all offseason has really come through.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's fact to that. And you look at someone like Kemba Walker, who, of course, has never been on a deep playoff team run, has never been a part of something like that.
and sort of been that guy who just wanted to be on that big stage, and he knows he's not getting any younger, and he's talented. You know, he's one of the top point guards in the league, and I think we all knew that, but I think it's easy to overlook someone like Kemba Walker, who was playing on a team like the Hornets, the fact that that kind of leadership is exactly what would fit in this situation for the Celtics. You know, a bunch of young guys who've gotten that taste of a deep playoff run, and they're still getting better, and the city's behind them, and, you know, the fan base is something that Kemba never, you know, played in front of on a professional team. It was a perfect fit, and honestly, Denny really lucked out with that one, because, you know, let's say, you know, Kemba is not an option, and Kyrie's gone, and Terry Rozier is your starting point guard. I mean, that's a playoff team in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. But I mean, how great of a team are we talking at this point in the season if Terry Rozier is starting point guard? You know, so it was a perfect match, and luckily, Danny Ainge was fortunate enough for that to pan out the way it did.
Absolutely. I know, Michael, you got to get going and whatnot. I just want to quickly say thank you so much for taking the time to spend 30 minutes on the program. Definitely very much appreciated. And I wish you and your family nothing but the best. Happy holidays and happy New Year moving forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being part of it. Thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much. That was Michael Hurley of WBZ CBS Boston, who joined us on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. Still on the line with us is Josue Pavon of the Celtics writer for WEI and as well as for CLNS Media, and in studio with us Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. Tom, I want to ask you, while we continue to talk about the Red Sox for a little bit further, when you do a comparison in contrast between last year's team and this season's team.
Apart, you mean 18 and 19 or 19 and 20?
Yes, from 18 and 19 and 19 and 20. Apart from Kyrie being gone, what do you identify as the single biggest difference in terms of basketball skill that you see is the biggest difference in terms of this team's success so far in the early going versus last season?
I don't think it's a matter of skill. I think it's a matter of playing team basketball. Mm-hmm. And everyone likes to say that the NBA is a star league and all this. Well, it's still a team sport.
Yes.
And if you, especially the point guard position, because he has the ball in his hands more than anyone else, either you know how to make it flow and you know how to make others around you better just by the way you play, or you don't. And I thought that Kyrie might be a bit of a ball monopolizer the way Irving was, but he hasn't been.
Yeah.
And he just wants to win. You can tell he's open to playing off the ball. He's open to playing with the ball. He's great with the ball. But it's still a matter of, do you make the guys around you better? And part of that is, do they like being around you because of the person you are? And I think if you look at it, everyone's playing better.
Mm-hmm.
And the center is better than anyone could have imagined. And you look at, did Kyrie make others around him better? No.
Not necessarily.
I think he's would be the best Harlem Globetrotter of anyone on the planet. But the NBA is about team basketball, and it's Absolutely. About making others around you better, and he didn't do that.
That was a good one. Josue, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, these guys make a good point there. I just think when it comes to Kyrie, I mean, there's just a lot of, I don't want to use the word baggage, but there's a lot of the unknown, right? And if you put him in that spot where he's the top guy, or, you know, the one that you have to rely on the basketball court, he's going to perform at a high level. Like, that's something you don't have to worry about. But if you're looking for, the kind of leader that would, you know, bring the best out of other players or so, I just don't know if he's that guy. I mean, he hasn't really proved it, right? He didn't prove it last year.
No.
He didn't prove it before that. You know, before LeBron James came back to Cleveland, did he prove it then? No. So you can't rely on someone like that, or at least expect that from someone like Kyrie. And again, you know, you look at what happened when he went down. That was almost like, if you wanted Kyrie to get the best out of his guys, that's like the worst thing that could have happened for that kind of, you know, for in the scenario where you needed the most out of everyone, you know, to put those guys all together after the run that they had, and then ask someone like Terry Rozier or Jaylen Brown to take a step back from what they were doing. You know, Jaylen Brown lost his starting job while he was injured. You know, he came back and it was just like, oh, you're not starting anymore. And it wasn't even like, okay, you know, we're taking away your starting position because you're not performing at a high level. But no, we have to make the decision now. Sorry, Jaylen, you're coming off the bench now. And Jaylen took it as well as you could really ask for from somebody of his stature, or at least for someone who just came off of averaging 17 points in the postseason all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, some players wouldn't have expected that. Some players would have requested a trade. So, you know, I give a lot of credit to what Jaylen Brown went through and how he handled things, because moving forward, heading into this season, look where we're at now, you know?
Absolutely.
Got a big contract. And to me, that big contract made all the difference to what he's doing on the basketball court. It's like, okay, now I feel like you guys are really invested in me. Now I feel like a piece moving forward that you're like, okay, we need you to be part of this thing. You're part of a central core, and you know what? We're not going to wait for you to become a free agent. We're going to sign you now because that's how important you are.
And Josue, how about the way he is
going to pay dividends for him moving forward this season?
How about the way he's embraced being a real defensive stopper? He always mentions Marcus Smart's the best defender, and then there's me. He's really into it, isn't he?
Exactly, and it shows night in and night out.
Right.
Which is huge.
It's true. So with the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, you have to wait and see what happens next year. Like, how do these two figure things out? You know, I'm talking about him and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But if you don't have Kevin Durant, and I did hear reports that the Brooklyn Nets were considering backing out of committing to Kyrie Irving if there was no Kevin Durant. If there's no Kevin Durant, then you have you could have yourself a big mess on your hands. Because there's Kevin Durant, you have a chance to come out of the East. You can win the East. Obviously, the talent level is there. We have to wait and see how he responds on the basketball court.
Might work.
From the leadership aspect, it's going to be really interesting to see how those two, lead that group into the postseason and moving forward.
It might work, because remember, he was able to play in the All-Star game last year, because that's what gets him up when he's around other All-Stars. And, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then you've got Kemba Walker. Mm-hmm. And I know the college game is, not the NBA, but that UConn team, nobody thought that UConn team was a national championship caliber team. Mm. But even though he's a high-volume shooter, he's an elevator of those around him. And that's not necessarily what you would think of as a high-volume shooting point guard, but he's got a track record for doing that. He certainly did that at UConn. And now he comes to the Celtics. He's surrounded by good young talent, and he's making them better because he's a good guy who's fun to play with.
And I got a question I got to ask you, Josue. Now, recently, actually a few days ago, I mentioned that Brown and Tatum are arguably the best young backcourt in the league, and if not in at least in the Eastern Conference right now. Would you agree or disagree with that assessment?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, fellas, we're talking about two Celtics players potentially making their first All-Star appearance. I mean, when we're talking about Tatum, I think it's safe to say even at this point that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But with Jaylen Brown, I mean, if he can continue this, I mean, minus that game against Philly, you know, that's what I think, but if he continue to play at this level, I mean, why not? You know, we're talking about two All-Stars along with Kemba Walker. It's also sending three All-Stars, you know?
And Hayward's playing great.
Yeah.
Moving forward. And Hayward's playing great. Yeah, if Hayward didn't miss, you know, the amount of games that he missed, I would pencil him in, but we'll have to wait and see. You know, there's still plenty of basketball left between now and the All-Star break. But
exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that completely. I just think the way these guys complement each other, you know, it's fascinating to see, you know, between their rookie season and now, and how they've been able to develop and help this team and help Brad Stevens. It's been incredible. I'm definitely a Jaylen Brown guy, for sure, you know, from the beginning and through all this and moving forward. My only concern is, looking back on what happened against the 76ers Thursday night, like, does Jaylen feel uncomfortable in those late game situations or in the second half when going to Hayward's back, or is he going to shy away from the big moments? You know, I think sometimes it's difficult for him to decide, okay, now I need to be more dominant, now I need to take over, when someone like Kevin Walker going off, when Gordon Hayward started to pick up some offensive momentum, especially in the second half, you know. It's like, okay, I'm going to let these guys do their thing. Whereas Jaylen Brown doesn't want to be that guy to say, no, I need the ball now. No, this is my turn to go off, you know. So it'll be interesting to see how he, you know,
matures.
How he matures, especially in those big game situations, marquee matchups, and in the second half when that team really needs some offense, needs someone to pick things up, like we saw Thursday night. It'll be interesting to see how he decides, you know, when to go off and when to be more passive.
You know, what's interesting about the Celtics, Josue, is that how many teams in the NBA can say, listen, we have a better fourth-best player than the Celtics' fourth-best player, whoever you want that to be, whether it's Hayward, Tatum, whoever. I mean, how many teams in the NBA can say our fourth-best player is better than your fourth-best player?
Not a lot of teams.
Very few.
Not a lot of them. And that's a great, you know, that speaks volumes for what this team is, you know, especially, you know, throughout that starting unit. You know, a lot was made about the bench and how they're, you know, they're one of the worst scoring benches in the NBA. But it's like, well, if you look at the starting five, I mean, that evens out. That makes sense, you know. We look at someone like Brad Wanamaker, who's been solid, rock solid this past month.
Yeah.
And then Shemi Ojeleye on the defensive side of things, you know, has been good as well. And what we saw from Cantor Thursday night, 20 points against the 76ers, I mean, that's a solid second unit, you know. Whether we're talking about those guys scoring more, I think we have to remember what they do on the defensive end. And I think we have to remember that these guys are still trying to figure things out, you know. I know some people want to see the Celtics go out and grab somebody to help them in the second unit. And I'm like, let's wait a little bit, you know. It's still early. You know, yeah, we're one quarter of the season is done, but I think we still have about 2 to 3 weeks to find out the true identity of this team. I think it'll be much more clearer, and it'll make things much easier, especially when you look at what they did with Carson Edwards and you know, Grant Williams getting time here and there. You know, Brad Stevens has been very hesitant in putting him in certain situations. But you look at someone like Carson Edwards, for him to go down to the G League, I think that's great. You know, I think that's a great opportunity for him. And I think that's something that could help him, you know, when he comes back and eventually maybe make him one of those key guys. You know, maybe he can average 7-8 points, you know, from the second half of the season into the playoffs. They need someone like that, an outside threat. You know, the G League isn't always a demotion. Right? And I've been saying that a lot in the last couple of months. You know, it paid dividends for Terry Rozier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And isn't it funny how
Terry, if he doesn't go to the G League, there's still scary Terry. I really believe that. And I think that's a great example of what the G League can mean to a first or second year guy in the NBA.
Or to Taco Fall.
Exactly.
Yeah, right, exactly. Let him develop down there.
Exactly, and there's one last question I'll ask before I let you go. Now, the number one weakness I view in terms of the Celtics so far this season is a lack of a big man. Now, I know what Cantor is capable of doing, especially in that Thursday night game against the Sixers, and was able to contribute 20 points and so forth in a losing effort. Unfortunately, I mean, Joel Embiid was flat out just amazing, especially on scoring 38 points.
Thanks, Shaq and Chuck.
Yeah, thank you for motivating him at the wrong time. But I gotta ask you, if you're Danny Ainge and you're looking at this team and you're looking at ways to improve this team at the trade deadline, the Celtics have the ingredients to potentially come out the East and maybe represent the East in the NBA Finals, but the lack of a big man concerns me. Now, my question to you is, if you're Danny Ainge, who are you potentially looking at as a piece that could help put this team over the top? You know what they can do offensively. Defensively, they're actually one of the top seven teams in the league right now, defensively.
Right.
But they're missing a true bona fide center.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, this team, if you look at the payroll, like, it's just really tough for them to try to facilitate a trade, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're top heavy with a bunch of max contracts. You have these middle tier guys, but do either one of you want to see Marcus Smart in the deal? You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's really tough right now for Danny Ainge
to
facilitate a trade for a big man to make a significant difference, right? There's always a buyout market, though. That's when things get really interesting. Dwayne Dedman is a guy I've been keeping an eye on. You know, he's a potential buyout option. You know, I think he's someone that could really help this team with the defensive muscle. Of course, he can provide a bit of scoring. He can rebound as well. And I think if you look at the buyout market, that's their option when it comes to big men, you know?
For sure.
It would drive me crazy a few weeks ago. Everyone was like, oh, they need a big man, they need a big man. Well, who? You know, everyone says that, but give me a name. People, that's when they start scratching their head, because that's what we're looking at right now in the landscape of the NBA.
It's
thin. There's a bunch of talented big men,
but
they're on the contract, and they're getting paid big bucks for, you know, a big reason. And if we were to go out and grab someone like that, you have to match contracts. You know, you can't just throw together all these rookies and think that you can facilitate a trade that way.
And they've already gotten better there.
You're putting together like $6, $7 million worth of salary. Is that? And that's not enough, you know?
Exactly. And Tice has gotten so much better, they've already improved at that position.
Right.
Exactly. And it's amazing to see what this team has done so far, considering the transformation from year to year. Josue, thank you so much for coming on the show today.